merkwürdig.
Strange. The whole time I was wearing my headset with jazz language, but no one was translating. And I was wondering if music or other things are a language, what does it mean to translate that musical language? At the moment, can anyone hear? Is the interpreter working into English? Asks the speaker. Is there a voice coming? Because I was supposed to get a voice, but I'm not getting the voice. Maybe the speaker's on the wrong channel, says the interpreter, but who knows? Anyway, these are radiophonic spaces, and it was an opportunity to think about this. We could analyze what I've just been playing. Here, my version. And you could say, first of all, there's the sound, there's the pickup, piano mechanics and so forth. You could describe it as a system. There's a player, there's an amplifier, there's a space, an audience, and an amplification. And that generates a sound space. But there's something missing in this picture here. Perhaps you've noticed, it's the brain, the thing that happens in you. And the brain of the device. You could take the pianist and lay him down in the brain scanning device, and then you're none the wiser. Which is partly because the fact that you've got a brain doesn't mean that you've got the apparatus. It also means that often scientists underestimate artistic creativity or mystify it, because I think the part of it which is idleness, the laziness in the activity, they don't take into account. So if there's nothing there, if there's an absence, that's just as much part of the creative reflex as an action. And unfortunately, you can't measure a nothingness. So that's a really weird situation, trying to represent or visualize creativity. That leads to a necessity, I think, for a plane of description which is immanent. A plane of immanence. I have a biography as a musician and as a writer, and I thought about the various different ways you can set things to sound or to music. I've worked with various different ones during my career. How could I visualize those different aspects of this setting to music, if you like? It's a kind of translation, it can be a background, it can be a stylization. Let's start with the translation, which means recontextualizing. Wherever music generates completely new context, this can be situative, it can be a particular work. For example, a few years ago, I was in a church in Puerto de la Cruz in Tenerife, and when I went in, they were just holding a service, and outside an accordion player began to play something from The Godfather, this tune. So automatically, this scene converted itself into a kind of mafia scene. Another aspect of setting things to music is to provide a background. You get that in films, you get it in waiting rooms, you get it in lifts. And this is an older video here, a band I was involved in. So providing sound or music has a purpose. Remember what Schoenberg said when he was asked in the United States whether he was prepared to compose music for films, and he said, no, the other way around. I'll compose the music, and you can make a film to go with it. So this is not about free will, this is about free purpose. And these coercive regimes of music affect a lot of walks of life now. There are studies that show that music has a considerable influence on subjective feelings. So it's used for optimization. Joggers, for example, listening to music, or patients relaxing better if they hear music. Depends on the music. Okay. So Ramon or Mozart. You can also use music for political purposes. Recently, the S-Bahn operator in Berlin thought they would try to get rid of down-and-outs and criminals from a station by playing atonal music. But what if people came to the station because they liked atonal music? The third aspect, stylization. So using music to build up a phenomenon, like an additional stage, like Jeff Moran with Ringing My Phone, straight out of Istanbul. That's a phone call. Another example, something I did. This is the appropriation of the vocal voice, the sonorous quality of it. If you put it into a different context, we did it with political speeches, and this was really deconstructive, trying to get the speech to vanish in the music. So forth. Another example, Dennis Oppenheim, work done in the 70s. He had a dead dog which he put on an organ and left the organ on, and the expectation is that the decaying metabolism would result in the sound on the organ changing over time. Don't really have the time to show you that. Then sonification, which is the acoustic form of visualizing space. So you've got the Geiger counter, for example, or astrophysics, visualizing sources. Turning an event into sound begins with the voice, really. Is the voice a sonification of a thought in the same way that this device is a sonification of an astronomical event? Or what about music as a turning a composition into sound? Or improvisation, a manifestation of freedom? Is that the same thing? Cognitivists like Noam Chomsky decentralize thought and language. They separate them out. There was recently a study which talked about Broca's area in the brain, which said that the language center is switched off while people are speaking, which basically means that speaking and thinking are opposites and opposites attract. Or then there's Johannes Kreidler, probably most of you know him. That's sonification of the financial collapse using a Microsoft program. and so on. What I think is worth noting there is that this isn't really a transposition, but this idiocy that you can hear reflects the idiocy or the reality of the financial economy. He's hit the nail on the head, something that really exists. Then there's putting things to sound or to music as representation. In what cultural or political context does music have a representative function? It might be football clubs, even Pegida has its own anthem. There's an idea that you can express something in notes, in tunes. Pop music, for example. What does that represent? Or then there are official ones like anthems. The question is, if you look at pop music, whether pop music can be represented as the taste of the period, for example. You can use a Spotify program and categorize top 10 hits for similarities. And there's a study here that shows that in the 90s, the top hits were more divergent than in other periods. And that since around 2000, the hits have become more similar to each other, aesthetically and functionally. So the question is whether that means anything. Is there a kind of conformism or a levelling going on? Is it a kind of sonic capitalism that's expressed here that's leading to a kind of normalisation or levelling out of spectacle? With Guy Debord, he says that the escalation of spectacle is leading to its banalisation. So the question is, in what forms do we get sonification in society? And the official positions, for example, official ceremonies, where they put everything to sound, every anthem will get people standing up and saluting. It's not a vocal act, it's a musical act. And the question is also for individual performers, how do you do your own signalling in individual ways? One way, this is a piece by me, a kind of anti-national, as opposed to an international, it's an anti-national. And this is a project where the audience got involved and people were asked, with this anthem spectacles that you get with football and rugby and so forth, if we synchronize that, sounds like this. It's a bit of a tribal quality, right? The rumbling that grows, and then the anthem. I might propose the Hungarian national anthem or whatever takes your fancy. Or the use of sound in the political voice is important. Virtue wrote an article about the different mics that presidents use. With Trump, there's one directional mic. Obama typically had these equalizing ones. He typically had two, and he would listen to both sides, right? With Trump, it's always this one fat, brutal, directional mic, and it distorts the voice. Interesting. You can see at the top the first debate between the presidential candidates was further away from the mic. But then his advisors told him to go closer to it. And he had more of an impact. Bottom right, you can see that Clinton's further away. Various aspects there. I've got 2 minutes, right? What perhaps has come out clearly or hasn't is that the Urenmensch, as a conceptual human being, sets up tensions between receivers, transmitters, and so forth. The apparatus is an illusion. I'm not transmitting sounds, and you're not receiving them. And we create a relationship in a performance situation, and there's a relationship going on here, now or not. Psychosis of nature, as Merleau-Ponty calls it. I'm going to play exactly the same as I played at the beginning.
Thank you.